You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
In 2010, a U.S. Supreme Court decision, Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission, rolled back legal restrictions on corporate spending on the grounds that political speech by a business entity could receive the same First Amendment protections that people do. But the notion that corporations are persons is under attack, thanks to activists in the Occupy movement and cities that have passed resolutions condemning corporate personhood. Joel Bakken is a professor of law at the University of British Columbia and author of The Corporation, a book and documentary critiquing corporate America. His essay, Psychopaths, Inc., on corporate personhood, has been included in The Occupy Handbook, a new book that features top progressive authors on the Occupy Wall Street movement. I spoke with Joel Bakken earlier this week, and I began by asking about the 2010 court decision that conferred rights of a citizen on a corporation.
The crux of that decision was about a law, Section 203 of an act, the BCRA, which basically forbid the contribution of money to or the broadcast or any kind of communication of what was called an electioneering communication. So it forbid unions, for-profit corporations, non-profit corporations, from spending money in election campaigns. And the case came about when it was actually a non-profit corporation wanted to advertise by basically putting out a little movie called Hillary the Movie, which was critical of Hillary Clinton. And they were forbidden to do that by this law, so they challenged the law. They said that it violated their free speech, and the Supreme Court in the United States agreed and went on to say that basically the problem with the law was that not only did it restrict the free speech rights of individuals, but it also restricted the free speech rights of corporations. And so at the end of the day, basically the decision gives for-profit corporations a constitutional right to spend money in election campaigns. And that's what has everybody so worked up.
Now, it seems to defy common sense that a legal construct designed to maximize profit would be considered to have the same status and rights as a living, breathing person. How do you explain that the courts could have arrived at such a seemingly bizarre decision?
Well, absolutely. That's what many other people are scratching their heads about. I mean, the idea of corporate personhood is an idea that goes back a long way. You can actually trace it back to Roman law. And it's an idea that has some utility as a relatively limited legal fiction. But what happens in Citizens United and in the cases that it relied upon is the notion somehow is treated in literal terms, as though corporations are actually people, and that they therefore have the same kinds of constitutional rights, for example, to express themselves as people do. And so it's really a question of a sort of narrow economic legal concept that basically says that corporations need to have certain abilities to operate in the economy as legal entities. It's taking that literally and making the jump from fiction to reality and saying that these artificial entities are actually the same for the purpose of fundamental human rights as living, breathing human beings. And that is indeed a very strange idea.
How does giving corporations the rights of persons affect the practice of democracy?
Well, fundamentally, if you give anybody a right, a constitutional right, that means that they have a lever that they can use to attack laws that are created by democratic bodies to restrict their freedoms. When individuals have constitutional rights, we think, well, that's a pretty good thing. Individual freedom's an important thing, and it's important to have some ability to challenge unfair and undue restrictions on individuals' liberties. But now when we give corporations constitutional rights, we're giving them yet another lever through which they can effectively deregulate their behavior, because that's what a constitutional right does. It says to General Motors or to British Petroleum or to any other company operating in the United States, if you don't like the way that you're being regulated by the democratic government and legislature, if you don't like environmental restrictions or you don't like restrictions on political campaign spending or on health and safety for workers, if you don't like those restrictions, you can find some place in the Constitution that may enable you to go to court and basically invalidate those restrictions so they don't apply to you anymore and you don't have to be bound by them. So to that extent, the people's power to regulate corporations is directly curtailed when corporations have constitutional rights. And we're not immune to that in Canada. I think it's really important to note that that corporations have free speech rights in Canada as well. Our courts have been a bit more sensitive in the context of the political process to the degree to which they're willing to vindicate those rights. But they have, for example, said that tobacco companies have rights of free speech, and therefore governments are constrained in the degree to which they can restrict tobacco advertising. So this is an issue in Canada as well. It hasn't gotten quite the same it hasn't attracted the same kind of concern and whatnot, because our courts tend to be a little more balanced in their approach than the current Supreme Court in the United States.
What about this idea of so-called corporate responsibility that has entered the mainstream? Does that help or hinder corporations behaving ethically?
Well, in my view, in the long term, it hinders it. Not because it's necessarily a bad thing for a corporation decide to be better rather than to do bad things and behave badly, but because I believe, and this is what I argue in the piece in this book, corporations are structured in such a way that corporate social responsibility can only be pursued by a company as a means to serving its own and its owners, its shareholders' interests. So corporate social responsibility always has to be strategic. And that makes it a fairly limited concept in terms of the degree to which it can actually protect public interests. But what's happening today is there's a kind of quid pro quo, a kind of deal between government and industry that goes something like this. Says corporations saying, okay, you know, we'll be socially responsible now, and so you don't need to regulate us anymore. So there's this interesting relationship between corporate social responsibility on the one hand and deregulation on the other. And so we're kind of developing this myth in much the same way that this myth of personhood developed in the late 19th century, in the late 20th and early 21st century. We're developing this myth of the good corporation, when in fact, as an institution, the corporation is constituted in such a way that it can't be good as an end in itself. But the myth is doing political work, and the political work it's doing is to help legitimate the rolling back of restrictions and regulations on corporations. So that's one of the issues I deal with in my piece in this new book. Is basically I say, you know, the problem of corporate personhood is not just the problem of corporate personhood, but it's the problem of the kind of person that the corporation is. And I revisit an idea from my book and film, The Corporation, and suggest, you know, if you really looked at the corporate person's personality, you would have to conclude that it's a psychopathic personality. And one where, to the extent that corporations present themselves as socially responsible, I analogize it to the way psychopaths are usually present themselves. They're usually very charming people. Part of the reason they're so effective is because, you know, they don't go around with their tongues hanging out of their mouths, but they present themselves in these very charming ways that ultimately kind of seduce people into being duped by them. And I suggest in this piece that corporate social responsibility is kind of like that.
does the Occupy movement challenge this idea of the corporation as a person?
Well, they've really taken it on as a major issue, and they've worked with a number of cities, a growing number of cities. I think it's over 150 now, and some states in the U.S. to get those cities and states to sort of lobby them and work with them to pass amendments that support amending the Constitution to overrule the Citizens United case and thereby to overrule the notion that corporate persons should have these free speech rights. And a couple of senators, Bernard Sanders from Vermont being one of them, I believe he's the, well, he is the only member of the Socialist Party who's a senator in the United States. And he and another senator have put together a proposal to amend the Constitution to overrule the Citizens United case. And a large number of cities, including New York, Los Angeles, Portland, Tampa Bay, many, many small municipalities, the state of Vermont and some other states, have all passed resolutions in their legislative bodies to support this constitutional amendment. So it's quite an amazing mobilization of political action, and the Occupy movement has been a key part of getting it happening.
What kind of actions do you think can have the greatest impact on curbing antisocial behavior by corporations?
Well, that's a big question. You know, I think the most radical thing that could happen would be for people to actually take seriously, if they aren't already, take seriously their obligations as well as their rights as citizens, and whether they're working at the local level. And I think, you know, there's a lot of important work that can be done at the local level in terms of city and municipal governments, park boards, school boards, city councils, or, you know, they're working at the provincial or state level or the national level or all at once, or they're parts of activist groups around particular issues or around more general issues. You know, I think if we all took seriously our rights and our duties to try to self-govern in a way, you know, that protects the world, that protects the environment, that protects our children, that protects our future, and try to do things every day to that end, that would be that would bring about incredible change. I mean, I don't have a sort of 10-step list. Well, I actually provide, I guess, an 8-step list at the end of this piece I wrote. But it's a fairly general thing. It's about trying to redemocratize the institutions that we have that are putatively democratic. I mean, we are blessed to have institutions that are structurally and formally democratic and that can be very progressive and very sustainable and very democratic in their operation. What's happened is they have retreated from the more robust roles that they can and should be playing in protecting the public interest and promoting the public interest. And so somehow we have to turn that around. But I do believe that working with those institutions, trying to recapture them, trying to reinvigorate them and redemocratize them is where the solution lies. I'm not a utopianist. I don't sort of hold out for the prospect of some entirely new utopian system. I actually think that we have some pretty good institutions that constitute our political system, and that's really a question of trying to get them back.
Thank you, Joel. It's been great to talk with you about this.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
That was Joel Bakken. He's professor of law at the University of British Columbia and author of The Corporation, a book and documentary critiquing corporate America. His essay, Psychopaths, Inc., on corporate personhood, has been included in the Occupy Handbook, a new book that features top progressive authors on the Occupy Wall Street movement. And that book goes on sale this week.